sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
And I am John.
Okay.
I was very close to doing something problematic.
You kind of have. You like dipped your toe into it and then you like backed out immediately.
I'm just a fan, okay?
That was like my least favorite part of Licorice Pizza, where they had...
Oh,
Michael Higgins or whatever, dude.
Yeah, it's like, shit, dude.
Such a fucking nightmare.
And then my other least favorite part of Licorice Pizza was the rest of the movie as well. Like, yeah, that part especially.
Not a fan of Licorice Pizza?
I wasn't a fan. No.
I thought it had a good start. But then it kind of didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I just don't like that Haim sister, 30-year-old Haim sister is trying to creep on, what was it, like 15-year-old? Philip Hoffman's kid, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, I mean, they do say that in the movie. Not that this matters. Not that this is not a review of Licorice Pizza, but
no. I mean, they eventually, but she doesn't like full out admit it until somebody calls her out and like, I thought you were like 30 something. And she's like, what?
And it's like maybe or yep or yeah. It's kind
of. I think it was more of like a yeah, because she kept lying. She's like, okay, I'm 24, which was a lie, right? Yeah. She ends up being like 30s.
30, yeah. All right. Anyway. Well,
kind of a horror movie.
Horrifying. And welcome,
like, let's sell mattresses. That's fucking horrific. That's a horror story.
That's the horror story. And welcome to the show. This week we're gonna review Kaiden.
Yeah,
Kaiden. Damn it. I knew I was gonna get it wrong. That's the Licorice Pizza discussion. Threw me off. Yeah, I had prepared for Kaiden. No.
Cool. Threw you off. And also the Licorice Pizza record store. I'm like, yeah. I refuse to go there because it's called Licorice Pizza.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Support Freak Beak Records and Permanent Records.
Yeah.
Gimme Gimme's cool.
Yes. Oh, good record.
Yeah.
All right.
Stop buying your vinyl at Target and Best Buy, please.
Well, no, not Best Buy. Best Buy is solid, but dude, it's a good company. So
Best Buy is a great company. Great associate, sales associates.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I say the workers, the blue collar workers, the heart and soul of the back house people, warehouse people, really.
those are the guys.
As always, John will give us the plot in 5 words, give our first thoughts, and then go to a deep spoiler analysis. But John, our top 5 movies came out. We just reviewed a lot of surprises. I don't think we tend to kind of have a similar list, but I think we diverged this year, so it's very fun when we do. And
what was your number one again?
The Monkey.
That's right.
And you chose
The Monkey Shines. Yep, number one movie.
You chose The Dentist.
Because we love the idea of a little capuchin trying to capuchin up to her her handler.
And I think it chose Companion. So spoilers for that. Still good to listen to. And we also reviewed Together, which we thought was just so was
it was okay.
It was okay.
Well, we reviewed that together. Yes,
we did review it together. That's true. Really the meaning of that movie.
That's what matters.
That's what truly matters. With all that said, check out those episodes. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. Kaiden, John, you recommended this movie. Do you want to give us the pun?
I did.
Five words.
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Coming in at number 3 for Kaiden, Blood Ride has some competition.
Ooh, not true, but all right.
And coming in at number 2 for Kaiden, John Carpenter's Suprema Screams, competition. And coming in at number 1 for Kaiden, Japan Seasonal Blood Ride Screams.
Very interesting. Very, very interesting. So... Kaiden, what?
Yeah.
Give me your, why'd you check out this movie? Why'd you recommend it? And what did you think?
It's been on, I think like one of my lists for a long time, but it's like something I just don't ever pay attention to. This was nominated for best foreign film, in 1964. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I've just always wanted to check it out. It, initial thoughts, man, it's a beautiful movie. Like it is, I'm surprised we didn't talk about this movie. Our friend group in college did not fucking just jerk off to this movie
together.
Cause it was like right up our alley, dude.
So to clarify, we did not watch movies in an alley and jerk off. So
No. We had apartments. Because we were very like, we were real up our own asses about like, we watch Kurosawa, we watch Hudakowski.
I mean, we say that, but I don't think there, I don't think a lot of us did, right? Who specifically? Name names. No last names.
But... We said no names. Paul, Edwin, Stover, Rolando, John.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Patty. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. We watched real movies.
Real cinema.
Real cinema.
Wonderfalls. Pushing Daisies.
I was always of the mindset... I remember hearing an interview actually with Paul Thomas Anderson, where he said that he went to film school for one day because he went to his first class and the class was like screenwriting or something. And they told him that they write real movies here, important movies, that if you want to write Terminator 2, get out of here, which he then immediately walked out and left because it's like Terminator 2 is a fucking great movie. So yeah, it's like, what?
What kind of an argument is that? Yeah. That's so weird.
Yeah. So it's like,
we read important movies that nobody's gonna watch, nobody's gonna care about. Those are movies.
We're gonna die penniless and we're gonna do no yeah, credibility. Yeah.
Like real artists, not sellouts.
So
we are the entertainment business. We don't cater to anybody.
Yeah, it's super. It's such a weird argument. I mean, he's right. I mean, you just write what you want, and the whole point of going to movies is to be entertained, right? Is to,
yeah, you're there to entertain people. Yeah.
So, but I don't know. That always stuck with me. So. I like to think that I wasn't that bad or judgmental or gatekeep. Is I terribly gatekeepy about movies? Probably. But
No, I don't think so. You lent out your DVDs.
That's true, I did. Not to everybody, but I did. All right, with all that being said.
But yeah, this movie kind of feels like it would have been one of them if we had been savvy to it.
I love how in the IMDb trilogy says it's in the spine and it tells you what number it is. That's always fascinated me.
Oh, like, that's cool.
When you check out, I could have sworn I saw that when I briefly glanced at it.
Like in the box set? Oh, question, because I know you have the Criterion Collection app now.
I do, yes.
Did you watch this on there or did you watch it on... I saw it on HBO Max.
Same. Yeah, it's... okay. So it was nice to have some commercials. So to break up... and when it... did the intermission? I took the intermission. So two long days of intermission. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's not in the spine of the. I'm sure it's in the Criterion Collection. I just can't find where it's and actually.
For clarification. So this is a quadrilogy.
Okay.
It's four different tales, right? Mm-hmm. And they are like really beautiful, like sort of like standalone movies. All like written by the same person and all directed by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
But they do really feel like you've watched a feature length each time. Even the shorter ones feel so. Then you finish it and you're like, oh shit, here we go again. So I had to take a break too. It was like, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. And I think what it I would echo the sentiment. I think this movie is fucking amazing. I think it's like beautifully shot, wonderfully acted, great stories. I think I was captivated by all of the four stories in it. Only problem is the pacing. The pacing is so slow. It's and just very feels slow. It's unnaturally slow, even for
like a weird like I don't know, poetically, I don't know if this is the way the tales are written initially, because they're based off of like actual ancient like Japanese tales, some stemming from China actually, but
right. And I just that was the thing that kind of got me, was just the pace of these stories are I don't even know what to compare it to. It's like In terms of
sort of like watching a play,
like watching a play. Yeah. I was gonna. What's the name of that? Go ahead.
Movie. But a little bit of trivia about this. Mm-hmm. This was shot on two different sound stages, mm-hmm. and the director would go and, you know, kind of delegate and direct the design and, you know, the lighting and all that with the crew, and then jump back over to the other stage to direct and film the other story at the same time. So he's like back and forth, like, you know, for four different movies, which must have been a headache.
Honestly, I was just I don't know enough about this time and like, and in Japanese film, like if this is how they were like filmed or this is how they were done. Or this was a purpose style that he chose to tell these stories. I just don't.
I feel like it was intentional because the production company started suffering loss because people didn't understand the movie.
Hmm. But they were popular in the country, right? But it's just outside of the country, it wasn't particularly well.
They were like wildly popular. The movie was wildly popular with critics. One of the rare times where critics were like, this is an amazing movie. But then the general audience member was like, I don't know what I'm watching. I don't like it.
Right. Yeah.
And surprise, surprise, mostly in America.
Right. Yeah, I could totally see American audiences not enjoying this movie.
Yeah.
With that said, really, you want to try to, let's talk about all four of these stories?
Yeah. Did you catch that there were supposed to be tales for different seasons?
I had read that and I kept that in mind. I didn't catch, because the first one's obvious, right? It's fall. And then
fall, yeah.
The second one's winter. So then the spring, summer was a little hard for me to keep following.
I think, I don't know, I guess the last one was supposed to be summer.
It wasn't blatantly obviously summer, not in any kind of conventional way.
Yeah, because it mostly took place inside of.
And
it was also the one story that wasn't like, this is the story. It seems like it was a writer was talking about different instances of ghostly apparitions.
Mm.
But yeah, the first one, fall, and like what were your initial reactions to like the movie starting?
Quite liked it. I liked that we have this narration that kind of sets up who the swordsman is and what he was, that he had basically was going to leave his wife. He's going to divorce his wife. And then because he had ambition, he wanted to kind of, you know, be wealthy or whatever. And they were poor. And so he left her for that reason, but he regretted it. And he kind of like, this is probably the one I like the most. I feel like it's like the one that fully rounds out like a story, you know?
I was going to say each of the stories, I think, sorry, my puppy's lapping up water. each of the stories to me, I think like within the first like 15 minutes, I kept thinking like, oh, this is probably going to be my least favorite one. And then by the end of each of the stories, I was like, wow, that was pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Because again, I think it was like the weird pacing. It was like this one felt very like probably, well, no, I suppose the third one was probably the most poetic. But the first one felt very like this samurai who like leaves his wife for like to marry into like money. And then he is just depressed and like regretful the whole time.
Yeah. And I think the sort of like cruel truth of it is that like the past offers like illusions of connections, right? Like it doesn't really like it, he remembers fondly this life that he lived with her and this regret because what he did was probably immoral, right? And
yeah,
so he regrets it, but then when he goes back, he kind of is, you know, punished for it, I guess, or whatever, because he's like cheating and he's like somebody with low morals overall, I guess, is kind of why, right, he was getting punished.
Which also my takeaway from it was he is just this guy that keeps reliving his mistakes in the past.
Mm.
Like I think he's old the whole time, he just doesn't know it.
Right, yeah, it's like he...
Oh, how are we dealing with spoilers? Sorry, I just realized...
Let's just spoil it, it's fine.
Okay, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I don't want to put four spoiler bumpers, like, no spoilers. We're just gonna... Yeah, that's a good point. Like, everything we're gonna talk about is gonna be pretty free and open. There'll be spoilers everywhere, guys.
Okay, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that this movie was a pretty good moral tale, you know, like in terms of like, and then he's punished for kind of what he did, and he's like, he rapidly ages and stuff like that. throughout the movie.
Yeah, and he's fighting hair.
He's fighting the black hair.
In more ways than one, because he like ages and becomes bald all of a sudden, mm-hmm. just up top. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, and he's very, he was not a very good person, right? Even to his new wife, he like also like shunned her or like pushed her away, even though according to the narration she wasn't particularly warm or nice either. So
yeah, but then he like he only got with married her to like have money, and he like left a woman that he actually did love because he's a garbage guy,
right? Very relatable. Not me personally, but just it's just like it's just in general overall that you could see the human moral conflict of the story at the heart of it and relate to it and why he regretted his behavior, right? Yeah. Only to kind of be punished by the end by this hair. We should say that like it's kind of done in a way where it's kind of goofy the way the hair is done, and there's like not a lot of sound, and like the acting's very.
That's where I was like, this is I initially thought the same thing. I was like, this is goofy, but I think it's because of the hair. But then it keeps going, and I was like, this is like some fucking, and forgive my ignorance, but like this is no theater at this point. There's like something very like it. I don't know. It looks like you're watching like an expressionist sort of play or something. All of a sudden,
yeah, I like that. Yeah. Like this whole movie reminded me, I was trying to think of the name earlier, is Night of the Hunt, even though that's more influenced by German expressionism, right? Or like that sort of style. But the way, just the fact that like a lot of that movie is shot on sound stages, Night of the Hunter, and there's like he created beautiful shots in the movie, and this reminded me of this movie as well.
Which fair warning, if you are somebody that's not into artsy fartsy film, this is probably not for you.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
yeah. It's, you're either gonna like think it's the most brilliant thing on earth, or you're gonna be like, I fucking hate whatever this is.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. You want to move on to the next one? The Woman of the Snow.
Woman of the Snow. So this one will probably be my favorite one because there is a movie called Tales from the Dark Side based off of the TV show Tales from the Dark Side. And this was my favorite tale from Tales from the Dark Side. Mm-hmm. Only to watch this and be like, wait a second. But this was done much more beautifully. Like this, the way this one ends, I actually felt like a little depressed, and I had to stop watching the movie for a couple of days.
You know, I had a different reaction. I kind of felt like I liked the initial setup, and I liked where the story was and stuff like that. Essentially, like two woodcutters go out or like fighting a snowstorm or whatever, and then they kind of are. I don't know if they end up in a cave or near a cave. And one of them dies, the other one lives, and it's because of there's like a spirit.
Lady in the Snow or whatever.
Lady in the Snow. And she kills one of them, but she leaves the other one alive, mainly because she's like young and handsome. That was basically it.
Yeah, it's what the Lady in the Snow says, and like forces him to promise to never talk about what happened there.
Right. And he can go and live his life and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And then some of the other villagers allude to like they are aware of some sort of demon in the snow, and that's why they don't like going out during the winter.
Yeah, and surprise, surprise, one day while cutting wood, he meets a young, beautiful woman, and they have like a romance, and they get married, and they have like three kids, and...
She never ages.
She never ages, says the...
So I wonder what's going on.
As the other community in this talk about how she never ages. You're so beautiful. And
it was like almost like they were like being like, yeah, what a cunt. She just never ages. She had three kids. Look at her. She looks amazing.
And then and then one night they're the main guy or whatever is making sandals for them and for the kids and for his wife,
really flashy ones.
Really red.
I wouldn't know any better. Yeah, this is like, you know, say like, so. Ancient Japan, so I have no idea. Man, they look cool, I guess. And I really like, she like tries them on, and then, you know, the sandals might have covered the front half of her feet, maybe.
Well, she rejected them. She's like, oh, I don't need them, which is like also another. Yeah. I think people kind of get where this story might go, right? That she was the woman in the snow that saved his life.
Yeah. And he just like decided to talk about it randomly. And
Yeah, because I think because he had like a sort of, he kind of he remembers because of the way the candlelight, the way she was sewing, kind of reminded him of that moment. And so he felt safe to like, oh, I'm going to tell my wife. I had this weird thing happen to me.
Let me try to Americanize the way he described the woman. Because he was like, best U.S. interpretation of this really beautiful Japanese folktale. Yeah, like there was some lady, like, I don't know, she's like a demon or something. But she was like so hot, kind of like you. Like, you're like super hot, you know? Like, God, you guys are both like super fucking, like, damn. But she was scary, but she was hot. That's kind of basically what he said.
And then she reveals herself to him, and you know, he
is
basically
very mad.
Very, very mad.
And she said, you know, I should keep my promise and kill you if it wasn't for those beautiful children.
Right. Yeah.
You better not. If there's like one, if you even make them feel uncomfortable, I'll come here and kill you. Like, she's like in his face, and he's just like frozen still and like kind of weeping a little bit, like he's freaking out. And then this is the part that got me. Like, she like, you know, runs outside or like phases through the door, and he runs and opens the door, and there's a snowstorm.
Right.
Even though there was no snowstorm
previous,
and she disappears into the forest, and he like runs out, runs back in, grabs the sandals, runs back out, and he's just like crying and puts the sandals on, like kind of like he realizes he fucked up, but like he loved her so much. And I thought that was really poetic and beautiful. Because then the sandals disappear, and you can tell that she took them, obviously. But
right, yeah, she took the sandals. Yeah, that moment worked. But I don't know if, like, it ends on a good emotional note. But, like, what was the plan here? She was, I don't get why she got so mad about why he told her. I mean, it was pretty innocent. It wasn't like he did it, like, maliciously in any intent, you know? And
I think it's kind of like a, more of like a spirit pact or something.
Okay.
So he, like, admitted that to her. And then I don't think she can change back into what she was for him. So I think, according to the spirit, like, it's he ruined it, and now it can never be the same again.
Well, would you describe this as she groomed him because he was young?
100%, because he was probably like 16. No, I'm just kidding.
And then, you know, what is that famous story with the chick that slept, the teacher that slept with her underage kid boy?
Oh man, you gotta be more specific in America.
Right? The famous one, the one they just made a movie about. I just felt the story was a little incomplete because I didn't completely understand the motivation of the woman in the snow. Like, I understood the why she behaved the way she behaved, you know, because of the promise and because I told you not to say anything, so he did, and then she became a spirit again. I
think she was just like, she fell in love with him, and then, and truthfully, a kind of nefarious way tricked him, like you said, probably groomed him to be like,
I'm gonna have this
because
life.
Because she wanted, like, this
human
spirit
life.
Wanted this guy, and
like a human life.
It wasn't really her life to be a part of, but.
Yeah, I just wish those things would a little bit, because there's like, it's a short anthology. It's like, I wish some of those things were a little bit more spelled out. Aside from that, it does end like you described, like on a really high emotion, like leaving the sandals.
Yeah,
out,
it's like really sad.
Yeah, really sad. Really good.
Oh, you know, we should. I'd hate myself if I didn't talk about the fucking badass, even though it's stationary, because they're actually, you know, obviously they're painted backdrops because it's like a you know, studio.
Right.
But they're like these big swirly eyeballs that keep staring at them while they're running through the storm. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, definitely.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And obviously the snow's fake too, but it's like, just you could feel this, like, you feel cold watching it, like this, man, they're going through it.
Yeah. Again, like, the cinematography, the production design, beautiful, absolutely stunning, gorgeous.
Yeah.
This is probably the one that, the next story, it's probably the one I had the hardest time, like, sitting with. This is the one that, I don't know.
Dude, oh, because now, I think if I rewatch this, which won't be anytime soon, it's a lot to take in.
Right.
Now I'd understand that's the story, or have a better time watching it, because the whole intro to the thing is somebody's singing a biwa, playing a biwa and singing this tale about these two clans, samurai clans that fought each other in this epic war. And because of my ignorance, I had a hard time with the way it was like played and the way the guy sang. Yeah. It was just like, I was like, oh man, I'm like, this is a lot.
Because, like, his name is, I'm just looking at him, Miminashi, the earless is how it's pronounced according to the way it's pronunciation chart.
Which I think they kept calling him Hoshi for short.
Hoshi. But yeah, Hoshi the earless. Yeah, it's a big story because it kind of covers a lot of period in time.
It's probably the longest story too, right?
And I think this character has a...
Oh, shit. Before I forget.
Yes.
The previous story, The Lady in the Snow. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked if you saw it on Criterion Collection, because I think that one, the story has like 20 extra minutes in it.
Interesting. So it could have maybe filled out some of the gaps
that you were wanting.
Okay.
It was like, where are the sex scenes to create these kids? I'm just kidding. So
there were some naked boobies,
Hoshi gets...
Right?
Yeah, we're like, where are the ghost boobs? What is this?
It was. You didn't see them?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I needed more ghost schlong too.
And ghost butt. And,
ghost butt, yeah. Just get the whole shebang. What is the whole ghost shebang?
Ghost reverse cowgirl. whatever. Like, I just needed more ghosts. Okay, go on.
Yeah, this guy's blind. He's blind, and he plays the biwa, I think is what it's called, and
which is like,
he's singing this tale about
device.
Yeah. Kind of looks like a lute, I guess, is the closest thing I can think of where the average person would know. As soon as you see it, I'm sure you've seen something like that in some form or whatever.
I think part of this is that he was a singer, quote unquote, bard, quote unquote, and it says here a minstrel. You know, he was like somebody who would like sing about tales.
And, do that, yeah.
He kind of do that anyways. But he was blind. Kind of like, he had eyes. He had one eye. That little kid, Kubu. Kubu and the three,
Kubu.
three strings or whatever the fuck. Okay.
But yeah, he plays this beautiful song at the beginning and we get a reenactment. Mm-hmm. This like really, it was kind of wild to watch a little bit. I kept like losing focus because I was like, what is going on? Because it's like this like fight. And again, the way he sings and plays, I was like, oh, this is a lot. I'm like sensory overload right now. And I guess the spirits of these or one of the clans overhears it and convinces him to go and play, like, oh, go play for a royalty or whatever. And because he's blind, he doesn't know that he's like going to a graveyard every night to play for ghosts. And then finally, because they've been trying to figure out where he's going at night, because he's blind, they're like, where do you know? We have no idea where you're at. You know, we need to take care of you. His handler, right? I guess who's a priest.
Yes.
There's a rainstorm, like a thunderstorm, and he forces the two, like, the guys that are the helpers there, which those guys were funny. They had a real, like, oh, bro, I just fucking work here. What's going on? Why is this happening?
Yeah.
Like, oh, dude, come on. They'd be like, nah, I don't believe in ghosts. Like, we think we saw a ghost. You did? Like, it's like one of the guys, like, everybody leaves, and Hoshi had woken up and is like hanging out praying or something, and he's just like, oh shit, what is that? But they go out after him and they find him, and he's playing to just like gravestones, and which that whole set is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they bring him back, right? And I'm like really simplifying this because this is a long story, by the way. This is like, I think by far the longest segment, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Which when it was ending, I was like, oh, I guess that's the end of the movie. And I was like, oh, there's a fourth one. I forgot.
Yeah.
The priest is like, you've been, you know, playing to ghosts, and this is bad because they're either going to kill you or you're just going to die because you're not supposed to be over there. So they write which I was thinking, I want to know the whole history about who decided on covering the body in like prayers and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, and how that whole ritual works, because that's like, I've always been fascinated by that, but I never researched it.
Yeah, it shows up in a couple of movies. Was it Exuma?
Bulletproof Monk. Yeah.
Bulletproof.
So,
what is it? Haiku, WWF wrestler from the 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, they cover him in prayers, and they're like, you need to stay still because it will come back to get you.
Yeah.
And one of the samurais comes back, this ghost, and he's like walking around, and then he turns and looks, and he only sees ears. He's like, oh, I only see the ears of the biwa player and the biwa, and I have to bring back evidence. It's my duty, so they don't know that I wasn't just fucking around. That's what it felt like he was saying. And I made a joke. I was like, you know, imagine the priest turns to one of the helpers and was like, Hey, you did remember to cover the ears too, right? Like I told you. You did go back, right? I'm just Well, that's the whole thing. This is how he becomes the earless. The ghost rips his ears off.
Right. He takes his ears as sort of payment, right? Like kind of trade for his
Or I think it was more of like he couldn't go back empty-handed. He was like, "Well, right. Here are the ears of the thing that played, so at least they know I tried."
So I will say to that point, they did have a little like upskirt shot on this actor and his thighs did not have the prayer. So he could have taken
he could have gotten some
thigh action.
Hammies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that it's not like I was looking, but I saw.
You saw.
Naked thighs.
You paused.
Yeah, just enhanced. Kidding. Enhanced 200%.
Start screen recording.
But yeah, no, he had some naked thighs. So that made me feel better about the ears being not covered. Because I think even in Exuma, they didn't cover the ears, right? It's just more broad thing. Not that these movies are like the same in any way, but it's the same idea. It's the same idea of
but I did like in prayer. The priest was like, you know, yeah, we fucked up. We didn't cover his ears. That's everybody's bad.
Yeah.
But then it turns into a tell of after all that, and he continues to play because more people hear about his tell. He becomes super rich.
Yeah, but he can't like.
And that's how that ends.
He's very tone deaf. The singing was a little not great. I'd be really that guy,
Again, I'm not terribly familiar with, like, so I have no clue. I'm like,
I'm just gonna just be really judgmental and just say the singing wasn't great. The end, but yes, no, it like you said, ended up becoming large gifts of money, making him very wealthy and stuff like that. And the moral of the story is what, John?
Don't be blind.
Be deaf.
And be deaf.
Be deaf. Yeah. Got it. Now,
Oh, what would you say the moral of the story is?
I don't know. Don't be so
I'm like, I have no idea. Yeah. Okay. I'm sure there is like some sort of story. I don't know. Keep the past in the past or something. I'm not sure.
I mean, I could try to read really quick. I mean, not really.
I don't think I saw anything that,
Just basically, that, I don't know. Right, well, musicians, they are terrible people. I don't know. Okay, let's move on to the last story. In a cup of tea. When I looked at the runtime, there was 30 minutes. I was like, great, this is going to be easily the most digestible of the four. So,
which, to be fair, I guess it was because it is like...
Quick.
It's super quick and it's not like a full story in my opinion. It's just like this writer is writing these stories, but I guess none of them are finished.
Mm-hmm.
So his publisher goes over to like see him on New Year. But we get like a reenactment of a few of the stories he wrote, and it's always involving like somebody holding like a cup of water or a cup of tea or whatever, and there's a reflection of something, and it's always a spirit that's haunting somebody,
right?
Yeah. And then it just haunts the person, and then it just kind of ends. And then the second one is this guy is trying to like kill these three people that are attacking him, but they don't exist.
Yeah,
and he can only see them in water reflections, and then he goes mad.
So what I thought was going on before the plot kind of revealed itself was that he was seeing
the Tim Robbins thing from that I made you watch a while back.
Tim Robbins things you made me watch for a while
back. Yeah, the one with who is the guy? The one where the Amazing Stories, where every time he looked in the rearview mirror, like a mirror, there was like some guy with like a scary white face.
When you said
Tim Robbins plays that character.
Yeah, when you said Tim Robbins, I thought of the other Tim Robbins. I'm sorry. That you were talking about.
Oh, Tim Robinson.
Tim Robinson, yeah. Like the zipline guy? He's like, what are we talking about here?
Hey, I worked on that. Tim Robinson. It was directed by, was it Scorsese? It was somebody big, right?
Yes. I was like, dude. It was like Scorsese, yeah. You know what I thought was going on? That he was looking at a younger version of himself.
That's what I thought, right? Too. Yeah.
Like, because he looked at it, but he was like, ugh. And then he looked at it again, and he's like, ugh. And then he looked at it again, he's like, well, I'll take a drink. So yeah. I assumed it was...
Oh, shit. I think the previous season was supposed to be summer. Now that I'm thinking about
The previous season was supposed to be summer because this year it was New Year's Day. New Year's visit.
Yeah.
It's like a year has passed. I guess so it's fall or winter.
Oh, I'm talking about the Hoshi the Earless.
Yes. Yeah. It's set during the summer, but
right.
It's this year that one of the lords is making his way for a New Year's visit. So so it's fall again or whatever the fuck. Winter. Whenever New Year's happens.
I don't understand seasons.
I don't understand seasons. There was no spring.
That's why we live in California.
It's very few seasons. So that this is the one that I think works the least, I think, in my opinion, just because it isn't really clear on what's going on. I think it's really cool what's going on, that he's seeing somebody in water, and I thought he was just a reflection of his younger self, you know?
But it was just, I feel like, a random spirit.
It was just
right?
a
like
random spirit burst. In the water, yeah. And then he got visited by his men. He drank him. They were going to come back and punish or fight him or whatever on X amount of day or something, right? So
yeah, and he goes insane. I think was the idea.
Well, he's in the water, right? So by the end of the last shot of this movie is him becoming what the water he drank, which is like he's...
Well, I wasn't sure. I didn't think that was him. I thought that was the author of the person writing those stories.
Well, the author was the one who, with the old lady, found... The author I thought was the guy at the very end who was looking for him, and like he had already like trashed his home or whatever.
I thought that was the publisher. The publisher came to say Happy New Year to him or something.
Yeah, that was the publisher. Did I?
Yeah. And then the author... the author is the guy in the water, right?
Oh, yes. You're correct. Now I get what you mean. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that.
So he became his stories or like something like that, right?
Pretty much. That's why it's a little confusing.
I guess that's where. Yeah, I don't know. It was confusing, but I agree with you. I thought it was a cool story, but I also didn't understand it.
It's a cool concept, right? Like that. What he's looking at somebody in the water and he's like smiling back at you or whatever. So smirking.
Yeah,
that was really cool. Nothing else was really that interesting. Yeah. And then the publisher comes.
What I thought was funny though.
What did you think was funny?
I was going to say it. The way it ends kind of is, they see the guy and it's like a huge cauldron with water in it. Mm-hmm. And it looks like the author's reflection. So they freak out and they both run away. And then the author starts to climb out. I thought it would have been really funny if he was just like in there.
Pranking him.
Like he wasn't dead. He was just hanging out in there. Like, freaked out. And he just like walks out.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. And then it kind of like ends with like you said, like, oh, it's the ending's to the reader's imagination.
Yeah,
three stories would have been
the whole thing.
Yeah, three stories would have been enough. I think they kind of.
Yeah,
the fourth one I feel like just feels very tacked on, in my opinion.
It was almost like a pseudo wraparound. Like it would have made more sense if that was at the beginning, also.
Right, some sort of like acknowledgement.
Then that the guy was the guy telling the stories or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Okay. I think one thing we should be said was that there was a lot of really great camera movement in this too. There's like Dutch angles and a lot of movement. Very contemporary, I would say.
Yeah.
I wanted to note that.
It's like everything about it was very well done.
Yeah. Even with its deliberate slow pace, it still had a very like imaginative cinematography and like production design, acting. Like everything's kind of like heightened in a way, kind of like theaterish, but it was easy to understand. And clear what's going on at all points scene. And yeah, you're going to run into, so like, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for anybody trying to watch these movies is just like the pace.
It's a little slow.
The pace. And I think like sort of is made in 1964. Movies aren't made this way anymore, you know? So
no.
You got to be very open-minded to, which is why I think you were commenting earlier about like, yeah, like if you're a film guy, film person.
If you like art house cinema, this is the definition of art house cinema.
I'm sure you already saw it. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah. So we don't have to tell you to watch it yet.
Yeah, but it's a worthwhile experience in that, like just to watch it because there's, even though it plays out very slow, they still have a lot of like horror elements like through it. Yeah. And the stories themselves lend themselves to like horror stories, even though they're kind of done non-traditionally or done more like film, more like a drama or like a film piece, you know, just a period piece. But they still echo those like moments and stuff. So,
yeah.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts before you read the movie?
No, I just thought this movie was excellent. Like even with like the things that I was like, well, I can nitpick and say I don't like this, but overall, like, wow. It is hard to get through, but I can't say anything other than it was a beautiful movie.
Right. Yeah. Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you're doing.
with your success spooky bones.
No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm gonna give Kaiden. I have to look at this.
I saw you.
9 sexy spooky bones.
I feel like I'm there too. I'm gonna say 8. I'm gonna say 8 though.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna say 8.
Because you hated the guy singing.
It was a little pitchy. I don't know.
It's a good chunk, like a good 25-minute song at the beginning of the story. And then you're like, oh, well, okay. And then he just plays, and then there's like another 3 minutes later.
It's like everything post his when he loses his ears gets very pitchy. Very. Yeah. But I mean, it's not his fault. He can't hear. So I'll give credit where credit's due. So. All right, guys, girls, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky. Stay spooky.